Welcome to the Best People We Know radio show. This is where you'll meet experts and celebrities who share their success secrets with you to help you be your most successful best too. Your host, Deb Scott, is a certified professional coach at Discover the Amazing You Coaching and author of the award-winning motivational book, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up. The Best People We Know radio show brings you powerful resources, effective ideas, and transformational tools you can use to educate, inspire, and motivate you to be your most purposeful, peaceful, happy best. So get ready to experience mind vitamins to feed your whole soul. Good change is about to happen. The Best People We Know radio show. Here's your host, Deb Scott.
Hello, all the best people I know. That would be you, feeling the love through the airwaves today. Wow, I am just so excited about the show today. I know I say that all the time. I'm excited about all the shows, and I do absolutely love meeting some of the most amazing people and all of you out there. This is the best thing that I've ever been blessed to do in my life. But talk about blessings. Cheryl Mosley's here, and she has had some life experiences firsthand with Mother Teresa. She's an amazing lady. I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am that she is here to share her personal experiences with us. I feel like I'm talking to a saint right here, just knowing Cheryl's here. But this is one of those things where, you know, you think about, how can I possibly interview this person and do her justice with this topic? So I'm hoping that you are all going to call in 347-637-1318. Share your shine with us. Ask your questions. Cheryl is just the most authentic jewel of a person. She has so many talents, and I know that this is going to be a great gift for all of us on hope and healing and forgiveness and compassion and just general inspiration for living and loving the life that we're already in. But before I read about Cheryl and bring her on to meet all of you, I wanted to remind you that our motivational marathon is getting ready to kick off, and it's an amazing event with some women that you can really trust to help you step into your greatness. And there's a Step Into Your Greatness ebook that you get. It's 30 pages of amazing tips and tools that you can use. And if you go to motivationmarathon.com, when you sign up, you'll get immediate access to that ebook, and that's fantastic. I'm telling you, I'm using it myself, reading all about some of the things that the speakers have put in there. So I hope that you'll join us for that. It's going to be an interactive teleseminar. It's going to have a lot of value. Bring a friend, because we all help each other. And then if you mark us as a favorite and follow us and you want to rate our show on iTunes, I would really appreciate that, because the more you spread the word, the more you keep us going and growing. And we're here as a service to you, and this is brought to you by you. So I hope that you will share the show with a friend, and especially this show with Cheryl. So let's talk about Cheryl, because really her adventures rival any blockbuster movie script, and I am serious. She is from Billings, and she's a nurse and a photographer, and she has served the sick and dying alongside Mother Teresa. She's been taken to Tibetan Buddhism classes from the Dalai Lama and met celebrities from around the world. She has explored, and are you ready, more than 80 countries since the mid-1960s, and she is young and beautiful. I think all this traveling keeps her young. One day, this is to quote Cheryl, one day when I was walking while she was in India, I noticed this little sign that read Missionaries of Charity. And Mother Teresa's name was written in really small letters, Home of the Dying and Destitutes. I had never heard of Mother Teresa, and as she approached, she came in, and this tiny little nun walked up to me at the door and asked if she could help me, and it turns out that it was Mother Teresa. And remember, this was before she was the Nobel Peace Prize winner. She was hunched over in a completely humble pose, and Cheryl noticed right away the love in the woman's eyes. I gave the lepers injections, I sterilized needles, and I did anything else that was needed, beating, washing, and giving out medications. Sometimes it was just being with people that you knew weren't going to live. Over the next 20 years, Cheryl would make that trip back to work with Mother Teresa 8 more times. To quote Cheryl, "I learned a lot about compassion," Cheryl admits. "Mother Teresa saw God in all people. I admired her for showing love, touching those who were sick, even when they had leprosy. She loved to have her hands on the heads and on their faces. I feel incredibly blessed. This was a huge part of my life." Cheryl's currently working on her book about Mother Teresa and her personal experiences. And you can visit Cheryl at eyeoftheworld.com. And it is a privilege and a pleasure to have Cheryl with us today. Hi, Cheryl. How are you?
Hi, Deb, and everybody else. This is such a thrill for me. Deb, thank you for having me on, and thank you to the audience. I know I saw on my own Facebook wall there were friends of mine that were going to be there. So if I can get through this and not start whimpering and blubbering here.
You know, I was stuttering at the beginning, too, just introducing you. I'm like, wow, I'm just, you know, sometimes we just get so excited. We, you know, we can't help ourselves. But that's what I love about the guests, and hopefully the listeners can appreciate that, too. We're all real here. This is the real deal. This is life, and we're all in this together. And, you know, that's okay. I think there's a lot of perfection in the imperfect. So we're going to do this together, and I really hope that people will call in. Actually, I see somebody on the switchboard already. We're going to get to them. I just want to get started with a little bit of your experience. But if you want to speak with Cheryl.
Let me interrupt you just 1 minute before I forget. It's eyeoftheworld.us.
Oh, I'm so glad. Okay, say that one more time. I apologize to everyone.
It's www.eyeoftheworld.us. U.S. as in Sam.
Okay, great. I so much apologize. I'm glad you clarified that one for me. And it's a wonderful site, and there's some wonderful articles and pictures in there. You know, you've just done, 347-637-1318. I just want to make sure. I see people in the chat room. I see a lot of new listeners, regular listeners. I'm just thanking everybody for being here, and I know that a lot of people listen to the show on replay. But, I there's just so many places to get started, and your story is just so rich in life lessons. Where would you like to start? Because there's so many things that I want the listeners to know about your experience and even your personal tragedy, because you were attacked in Thailand, and Mother Teresa helped you with the forgiveness and healing there. And do you want to share that with the listeners? Is that okay to do? Because maybe
yes. I have
Maybe
no problem doing it.
Okay.
It took me about 40 years to get to that point, but I'm...
That's okay, better late than never, right?
Well, I spoke to people individually about it, but I had not shared that until the interview that they did last year for Mother Teresa's birthday. And in addition to that, I want to mention, I don't want to start here, but I'd like to mention that last year on her birthday, on her 100th birthday, I was invited to go to the Sisters of Charity of Leavenworth, Kansas, and speak at their mother house on Mother Teresa's birthday. So that was a real thrill, because I had worked with the Sisters of Charity as an RN since the very beginning when I graduated from nursing school in 1969. So even though I could explain a little bit about my background before I get to that, if that's okay with you, Deb.
Please do.
excuse me. When I grew up, and I'm from Venice, California, even though I've been in Billings for almost 20 years now. When I grew up, in a family where it wasn't a religious family. My mother had been excommunicated from the Catholic Church in the 30s because she was divorced. And my father grew up in a Nazarene church in Venice, and both churches was a problem, because you know she was divorced and she was older, and he married a Catholic woman, and back in those days that wasn't really very acceptable. So I grew up kind of making my own way, and my parents never forced anything upon me. In fact, I used to follow my daddy into the bathroom. There was no lock on the bathroom, and I would say, "Daddy, who is God? And where is God?" And my dad would always answer me, "He's everywhere. Just keep looking. Someday you'll find him." And I said, "Well, how do you know God is a he? You're blind and you can't see." And he wouldn't really answer me. I'd say, "What's it like looking out of your head? Is it all black out there?" And he said, "No, it's like looking out the back of my head. There isn't anything. But he says, I see light in other people." Well, that was so captivating to me when he would talk about the light that he would see in other people. But now as I get older, I so appreciate they did not make me think anything. They didn't. I was baptized on my own when I was 19 years old. Actually, I was a little bit older than that. But so I didn't have the background of being a Catholic. But I went to nursing school, and the nuns were the ones who trained me, and I had wonderful training, and then went to work with the Sisters of Charity. But the thing that happened with India, let me skip back just a little bit. So in the middle of all this, my mother found out around the time I was in nursing school that she had metastatic breast cancer. And she knew that I would be taking care of my dad because she already had, it was massive lymph node involvement. And she had a radical mastectomy, and she said to me one day, "You need to see the world. You need to experience life because I know that you will be taking care of your dad." And it was such an incredible gift that she gave me to be able to do that. So, and it just so happened when I finished nursing school and I worked for a couple of years and went on a modeling tour, and then some friends asked me to go to the Himalayas to do high altitude mountaineering. And while we were up there, we were there for about 2 months, and while we were on the mountain, we got into a bad storm, and one of our Sherpas died, and we couldn't find him for about 11 days. And we lost a lot of weight, we ran out of food, we weren't really sure we were going to survive this. Our tents were all blown to pieces except for one we got six of us in a four-man tent. And when he died and we took him back to his village, which was a Buddhist village, this leads up to Mother Teresa. It was a Buddhist village, and he left our group trying to save our life, even though we didn't want him to go. So we tried to do what we could in the village, and we gave them some money, and it was very difficult to because he had been with us for quite a while on that climb. So we left there, and I continued to travel with a couple of friends. And when they left me and I was by myself was when I was assaulted, raped, gang raped, cut up, brutalized, and left for dead in Thailand.
Oh my God.
It was horrifying. It was so horrifying. I was afraid to even move once I was kind of left unconscious. And when it was in the middle of the night, and when I was finally able to get out of there and I went to see a woman doctor, she made me feel so shamed. And, you know, like kind of like it was my fault. Well, and I was by myself. But I didn't want to tell my parents because I didn't want, to be honest with you, I didn't want them to convince me to not, you know, to come home. And then I felt like I needed to do this myself. I needed to get over it myself. So with a little bit of time, and I went back to India. I knew that I had to go back. I hadn't met Mother Teresa at this point, remember. I knew that I needed to do something to heal. And it was not only the rape that had just happened, it was the death of the Sherpa and feeling this terrible fear. So I went, I found a Tibetan refugee camp in Delhi. I went back to Delhi. And I was working there, and then I would take these walks. And I was, that's just like what you, when you started the introduction. I started walking, and when I would take breaks, and on the way, I was living in this little guest house in Delhi. And when I'd take the bus out there, and one day I was walking, and I just saw this little sign. And I just felt like wandering in there, and it wasn't because I really thought that I was going to do anything. I was curious. What was this little place? It was one level, but fairly large, stucco with a gate around, and there's a fence around it, but no gate. I could easily walk in, and this tiny little sign. And when I walked in, here there were these three nuns, and there must have been 200 people on cots. And obviously they were... And it said the dying and destitute, but I didn't know that they, at the time, they had some lepers there that had not gone out to, they had a separate place, but they could stay there for a while because sometimes people would just dump them there, or the nuns, I would go out with them after I started working there, we'd go out and take people off of the street and bring them in. So I didn't really talk to her. I talked to her, but I didn't talk to her about the tragedy when I first came. I just felt so enveloped by this amazing love that these, at that time, these three nuns had. I found out that that wasn't her home, but she would go back and forth between there and Calcutta. And in those days, I can't remember right now how many homes they had, but not that many. I mean, it was the first part of 73. January of 73 or February of 73. And so I just decided that I would ask them if I could help. And they said yes, and that was the beginning of a whole, an amazing gift to me. Here I was there helping them, but they were all really helping me. And I'm just going to get a drink of water while we're talking.
Yeah, and you know, isn't that so true? I really think that so many times the things that we want in our life, you know, they really come to us by giving them away first. And I love your story, not because I enjoy hearing. I mean, I can't even imagine gang rape, Thailand. It makes me cringe, and I'm sure the listeners are just horrified. Just a horrible thing, but it's a real testimony about your forgiveness and, you know, working with Mother Teresa and how two souls and people that really care, how there can still be, no matter what happens in our life, there can be good that comes out of it, and there can be healing, and there can be peace. And, you know, you sharing your experience with us, I know it must be in many ways very difficult, but I know that everybody is grateful listening that you are opening your heart to us, and I know that this is going to be a very healing time for many, as I know it already has been for me. You know, why don't you tell the people listening a little bit more about your personal experience in working with her, because you had been there, I think it was 8 times, did you say?
Yes, yes. And sometimes I went back to Delhi, and sometimes I went to Calcutta. There are other places that she has in the world, but those were the two places that I went. And sometimes I mostly worked with in the home for the dying and destitute, and I worked with the lepers sometimes, and worked in the orphanage. There are two orphanages. But I didn't work there as frequently. I think I knew that I needed to be with people that were on that edge. And not to say that the orphan children didn't have suffering in their life. I don't mean that. But I needed to put myself in such direct contact. And I just felt like people love to work with children. But for me, I think I really needed to... to stretch, and I think that because I was already a nurse, it was very comfortable for me in the sense of working with people that were ill. That part wasn't hard. I was still dealing with my own fear and anger, and truly I was still feeling very hateful. I was worried about going back out into the world. And I started little by little. I didn't have long conversations with her because she was very busy. And as you can imagine, she got busier and busier over the years. But we spent enough time together each time, and usually there were short periods of time. And little did I know then, I don't know whether all of the listeners know, and you probably do, Deb, but you know, eventually the world found out that she was living in her own darkness. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yes, she did have that. I guess what we would refer to as that dark night of the soul, where mm-hmm. you know we're not working on those feelings of the warm and fuzzy and all the consolations that God gives us. We just have to step out in faith and action and trust. And I think that she struggled with that, right? I mean, you could probably talk to that too.
She didn't talk to me about that in a direct way. She didn't tell me that she personally was feeling that. But she did share so much with me about darkness as well as light, and I'll explain to you how this occurred. But now that I look back on it, and I've read all of the letters by this time, I now understand so much better and so much more clearly a lot of the things that she said to me, which I think personally gave her such enormous compassion for all of these people. Because, you know, the quote that you often hear from her about being unwanted and unloved, uncared for, forgotten by everybody, and lonely is a much greater poverty than somebody who has nothing to eat. And
Yes. That,
you know, it's a phrase that you hear over and over again, and she said it over and over again. And I know that that space in her, to me, she was nothing but light. But I just felt that she understood the dark. She understood what it was like to be afraid and angry. And that is, in my vision, that is the key that made her be able to really have this incredible compassion for all of these people. Because she, and now that I look back too, she had, you know, up on her, I don't know if you've looked at the pictures on my website, I have pictures of inside the church. And when I went to Mass with her on the last time I was there in 92, and there's a crucifix, and it's very, very simple church. All of them are so simple. And if anybody wants to see it and they haven't, go to my website at the bottom of the bio page. So, you know, you go, in fact, I'm thinking about when you have it on your site now, what people connect to, I think, is the media page about Mother Teresa.
Yes, yep.
But if you go to the bottom of that page and it says, go back to the Cheryl's bio, I'm not looking at it right now because I don't want to be distracted by the anybody on the computer, but so I'm just talking to you like my girlfriend. But if you go to the bottom of that page and you click on back to Cheryl's bio and you go to that page and then you scroll down to the bottom of that one, there is a link there where you can click and for 5 minutes you see a little short video that I did with her the very last time I was there. And there are some pictures of her in my photo galleries, but my point was that the church is, that particular church was in Delhi at the orphanage. And the cross where she has, it's the I thirst. And her connection to Jesus was so strong. What she felt for her entire, since her vision that she had way back in 46 when she heard her calling, was always Jesus on the cross. And that, I think, is what made her, she was so connected. It was like she was just crazy in love with Jesus, passionately and identified with him. In my feeling now, when I think back of all the things we talked about and thinking about the pain that she did go through, her own inner darkness, was because she was so identified with Christ at the end of his, you know, on the cross. And when I think about it, that was such an amazing gift that she had, that her darkness became, not only was she the light, but she came to love the darkness and the light. And
isn't that really the paradox, isn't that? I mean, Cheryl, I just want to pause, because in her darkness, it seems as though the deeper her darkness, the more bright her light to help so many others. And
yes.
I really, you know, so that no matter what it is that we're going through in our life right now, those of us here together for this special show with you, and I believe that she's watching over each one of us, saying
yes.
that no matter what it is that we are experiencing, there's always goodness, there's always greatness, there's always
yes.
something to be learned and something that we can help someone else through because of that compassion. You know, getting to the article, and I want to make sure everybody goes to your website, it's absolutely phenomenal, but this one article that I have, A Light in the Darkness, which was featured last year, what was that magazine, YVW is?
Yellowstone Valley Women Magazine.
Okay, wonderful article, and of many that are written about you and your experience with her. But to quote something in the article, it says here that you wrote, "She was intuitive and she knew the pain that you can carry inside. And when she said to me, 'You can't live your whole life like this. You've got to get over that and not live in the past. Or you are going to let those people control your life for the rest of your life.'"
Yes.
And, you know, practical good advice for all of us that she speaks here today. I mean, it is so true, because everybody thinks, well, this forgiveness, it's, you know, condoning the other person's bad behavior or the other wrong that was done to us, and not so. On the contrary, it just frees us to go and move forward and live the life that God wants us to, correct? Is that part of what she was trying to tell you, do you think?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. When she used to say to me, don't be, you know, like when you're a little girl and your parents would say, don't be afraid of the dark. She said that with such a profound feeling, you know, don't be afraid of the dark, of the darkness. Go into it and really see it. See it and... You know, and not only did she talk, of course, about praying. Of course she did that. She never, by the way, she never did try to convert me, or I never saw her try to convert anybody else. She lived the life of conveying, of giving light and love to everybody, but also being so comfortable herself with darkness that it made her filled more with light. That's how I saw her. Because she understood it so much, and she just wanted you to, like if you were, when I was feeling afraid, she would say, just do it anyway. Do it anyway. Know that God is with you. Know that you have light in yourself, and see God in other people. See God in every person, and be with that fear anyway. It's okay. And it's not. She wasn't trying to make me feel that it wasn't valid or important or real, but she spoke a lot about cultivation, and so she said, "Don't cultivate that. See it, but there is light and darkness in all of us, so that I wouldn't feel ashamed, because that was the other part too. You know, in those days, to know that you had been raped." And brutally raped by more than one person is not something that people at that time really wanted to tell anybody. I'm not even saying that it's easy today, but for me to see that, to talk about it now, and to to have felt this surrounding with all these people that had their own issues as well, and trying to see how she lives her life somewhere inside of her, even though she never spoke about it. She got it. She understood it. But to still carry the light, and the more that you see the reality of what is there, the more that you can accept all of you, who you are, so that you're not, you don't feel so stuck. And to know that there is suffering in everywhere in the world. And I know that that was something that she focused a lot on, but there really was suffering. There is suffering, even today. We just have different way of suffering, different dramas that we are all in, different stories. Whether you have lost your job, or you've been raped, or you're or poor, or you don't have a lot of love in your life, it's everywhere in the world. But it's to see the light through that, to take all of it in. Deb?